I just want to create awareness about what sickle cell disease is, that it's human beings who have it. People who have regular lives and struggles and hopes and dreams also have sickle cell disease and are just trying to live a happy life, a happy full life. That's all.
Welcome to Health Hats, empowering people as they travel together toward best health. I'm Danny Van Leeuwen, a two-legged, cisgender, old white man of privilege, living in a food oasis who can afford many hats, and knows a little bit about a lot of healthcare, and a lot about very little. Most people wear hats one at a time, but I wear them all at once. We will listen and learn about what it takes to adjust to life's realities in healthcare's Tower of Babel. Let's make some sense of all of this. Fatima and I first met as colleagues on the same team working for Advocates, Inc. in Framingham, Massachusetts. We worked together in quality management for this organization that supports about 23,000 people with disabilities. Quickly, I learned that Fatima had sickle cell. We bonded over working with chronic illness and clothing. Fatima wore gorgeous, colorful hijabs, and I wore colorful bow ties. People would ask us if we texted before work to color coordinate. I've learned so much from Fatima. She was curious, questioning, and driven. I actually became more comfortable owning that I was an old white man of privilege working with Fatima. It's part of who I am. It's okay. It depends on what I do with it. She opened up new vistas of appreciation of health equity challenges. We've stayed friends and coached each other through various chronic illness and life challenges. I'm so delighted to have the opportunity to chat with Fatima now. I spoke with Fatima's mother, Isosa, previously. I will edit and post that interview next week. Okay, here's the interview. You'll appreciate Fatima's poise, eloquence, and humor, as I do.
Good morning. I'm sitting here with Fatima Muhammad Igala.
Close?
Igala. So thanks for joining me. Fatima and I have known each other, I'm trying to decide if it's 7 or 8 years or more. We worked together for like 3-4 years. At Advocates Inc. And we've stayed friends since.
Yes.
Okay. I wanted to talk to you some about your experience as you transitioned from pediatric to adult care in managing your sickle cell. I think, though, I first want to ask you really generally, can you remember where you were the first time you realized that health was fragile?
Where I was. Yes, I think I was 7 years old. It was winter. And it was my first memorable pain crisis that I had to go to the hospital for. And it was winter. This is in Framingham, Massachusetts. So Massachusetts has really cold winters. And I was just in excruciating pain on the couch with a heating pad. I missed school that day. And I just did not understand why my body was not working. I wanted to go to school. I loved school. I wanted to go play outside in the snow. And it just was not, my body was not working. And I did not understand why or how to fix it. So that was the first time I realized that health was fragile and that.
So that was your first experience with sickle cell? Like knowing that, well, maybe you didn't know at that time that it had a name.
Well, thankfully the year I was born was the year they started sickle cell screening of all children in Massachusetts, which was actually very, from what I know, is very groundbreaking because a lot of states did not have it at that time, sickle cell screening as like a mandatory screening for newborns. Mm-hmm. And my sister was born the year before, 1989. And after 6 months, she was, you know, a colicky, fussy baby. Nobody understood why she was fussy. This kid will not sleep through the night sometimes. She's just cranky sometimes. And so it was after I was born, a year later, after they had done the screening, found out I had sickle cell. They then decided to screen her for sickle cell and found out that she also had sickle cell. Yeah, so she owes me a lot because I helped her.
There you go. In your early years of managing this, what was your relationship with the medical system, doctors, you know, hospitals, staff?
It was magical. The doctors are, you know, I was a child, so I was always in pediatric units. And nurses, I found that in pediatrics, you know, I don't know what kind of screening they do, but I've always had amazing nurses. I can still remember some of their names to this day. And now looking back on it as an adult, they've gone above and beyond their jobs. My parents have 5 kids. So when I would be in the hospital, they couldn't always be there every single night overnight. Mm-hmm. They worked and they had other children. So I just remember having amazing relationship with the staff, with doctors, nurses, all medical caregivers. And my mom and dad were the buffers between me and the medical group. But one thing I do appreciate is that my mom was always she tried to explain everything to us about what was going on. And even though she definitely took the lead in our care, she would discuss things with us openly. And sometimes to the point where I thought, why is my mom so mean? When other kids are sick, their mom, you know, waits on them hand and foot and, you know, so lovey-dovey. But my mom, when I was in pain, she would, if I came to her in the morning and said I'm having pain, she would give me my medication and ask, is it pain that you're going to have a rough day in school? Is it that kind of pain? You can still go to school but have a rough day. Or is it bad that, like, you cannot go to school, you need to take a day off? Or is it bad that you need to go to the hospital? So at the age 7, 8, 9, we had to answer those questions, and she would make us open up our own pill bottle. Mm-hmm. And even though my arm was in pain, and make a sandwich and get our cup of water. And she really did not baby us. Mm-hmm. But my dad was really, you know, in all sorts of, he just could not handle when we were in pain. Mm-hmm. He really babied us a lot. So, but now that I'm older, I'm so thankful to my mom for that, because it made me, she wanted to make us independent. Now I know she used to go to the other room and cry. She was so distraught. Mm-hmm. But she wanted us to have a life outside of sickle cell. So I'm very, very thankful for that independence that she gave us and didn't allow us to feel sorry for ourselves. So I'm so, so thankful for that.
So do you think that, you know, your mom asking you to describe it and calibrate, you know, how serious was it? Was that sort of the beginning of your being able to speak up for yourself and have words to describe? You know, it seems like part of speaking up for yourself is communicating your experience.
Definitely. Definitely. Exactly. Exactly. My mom, she, at that time, Framingham, Massachusetts was a very white town. It was just the beginning of the immigrant wave, like, and there weren't many Black people in particular. And it was just like a quiet suburb outside of Boston. Because of the demographics, there were not many even physicians who were familiar with sickle cell disease. Mm-hmm. So my sister and I were the first patient for our pediatrician to have sickle cell. And so my mom would carry around these binders of information. And so her number one thing for us that she found that she really wanted to instill in us is advocacy. Mm-hmm. Because we had to advocate for us so much. She really wanted us to learn how to advocate for ourselves. So I think that was a huge, huge concern. And mm-hmm. that was all part of, you know, the greater plan, as I've come to realize. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It seems like that with, you know, the stuff we've communicated about related to managing sickle cell, whether it was pediatric or adult, has a lot to do with pain management. So I want to, like, before we talk about that, what are some of the other things you had to deal with in the transition from pediatric to adult services besides pain?
One was hydration, because as a kid, you know, my mom would get us these interesting, cool-looking water bottles, and I knew I had to drink water, but then I wouldn't always do it. Mm-hmm. I was very active, very much a tomboy, and I loved to run around, and I knew I could do that, but I had to, couldn't overdo it. But these are all lessons throughout growing up. I had to, you know, learn the hard way in a lot of cases. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's not the smartest thing to go outside in the snow without a jacket and participate in that snowball fight that's so fun. So it's during these experiences, and my mom would just be honest, like, okay, if you choose to do that, you choose to be sick. Mm-hmm. That's what's going to happen. And you know, like everything your parents say, it's like they don't know anything because you know everything because you're 10. Mm-hmm. So obviously you're so wise about the world and the way it works. But after learning the hard way a couple of times, mm-hmm. that was like a huge self-care. Let's just, that's what it was. Like, mm-hmm. so things that people usually don't learn until their 20s, I had to really consider mm-hmm. at preteen age. Okay, I know my period is coming. I should probably stay extra hydrated because mm-hmm. having a menstrual cycle could trigger even worse sickle cell crisis if I wasn't hydrated, if mm-hmm. I wasn't dressed warm mm-hmm. or those kind of things. So it, and thankfully the doctors would also explain this to me during doctor's appointments. Okay, what are you doing to take care of your care? And what are you doing to take care of your sickle cell? And that was a huge part of the doctor's appointments.
Mm-hmm.
I found out later that my mom and the doctors, you would plan these prep talks, like, okay. You know, wearing jackets, staying hydrated, you know, not overexerting yourself. And, mm-hmm. And that was a huge component that I'm very thankful for the doctors. Besides just giving pain medication, it was mm-hmm. an education, mm-hmm. How to educate me about my own disease
yeah.
in a way that my child brain could understand. So that mm-hmm. is very, they would draw, if it took drawing out the pictures of the mm-hmm. sickle cells and explaining the vessels, that was a huge, huge component of my pediatric care that I'm so thankful for.
Mm-hmm.
And I really feel is lacking in adult care.
See the show notes or my website, www.health-hats.com, for more information or to subscribe or contribute. If you like it, share it. Thanks. So, okay, the good lead to adults. So, when did this transition to adult care happen? Like, I'm assuming it wasn't like, you know, bang, all of a sudden it's adult care. But how did that progression occur?
So I guess they started prepping. If I think back, when I was 18, I went to college. I went to University of Pittsburgh in Pennsylvania.
And your mother told me that she fought you tooth and nail.
Yes, she did. She did. Everybody was like, and then on top of it, you know, after she finally realized she was losing that fight, everybody blamed her. You know, let your daughter go to, as if, you know, because people assume that other people have control over their kids when they know they don't have control over their kids. Like, you're going to allow her to go to school in Pennsylvania. It's the craziest thing, you know. And I'm thankful that she didn't force me to stay.
You had to do it. That was dramatic.
It was really dramatic. I had to transition from a new care to another care. And actually, a huge part of my orientation was visiting my new doctor. I remember his name is Dr. Krishnamurti at the Children's Hospital in Pittsburgh. And so at that time I was 18, so I was still under pediatrics. In some places, they let sickle cell patients stay in pediatrics up until the age of 19. Others is 21.
Mm-hmm.
I was just 25. So I guess different programs have different age time. When I went to, you know, I went to Children's Hospital, met with Dr. Krishnamurti and his team and his staff, and it was really amazing. The care, the education, the support, it's all there. under pediatrics. But then when I had to transition to the adult care in Pittsburgh, and I had to really do that by myself, that was like 2021, with, you know, some consultation from my mom over the phone. But at that point, I'd been living, you know, away from home for a few years, and I actually had the confidence to do it. And there they did an amazing, you know, they would go with you to see the doctors, like I think a nurse or someone from the team would, they would go in groups. You go to the adult patient care, you see the doctors, you see the inpatient hospital, you see the hospital where you would stay if you have a crisis, the outpatient treatment center. You'd meet the staff like that with that support. So it wasn't just like, oh, there you go. It was a few months of transition.
Wow. Really, so they really guided and like it was a warm handoff, as we used to talk about.
Oh, yeah. It was, but it was still traumatic. I did not want to go. Did not want to go at all. But then transitioning to adult care in Pittsburgh with the University of Pittsburgh Hospital was one of the most amazing things. The doctor there at that time, still there, is Dr. Novelli, Enrico Novelli. I became a patient with the adult care there. And then by doing that, I was also pre-med at the time, looking into going to medical school possibly, or the healthcare field in some capacity. So then I was also able to become, do research in his wet lab and do research. Clinical research. So I became kind of like a student of his. So I'd work at the wet lab a couple of days a week. And then I'd also work in his sickle cell program. I would shadow him as he went to visit other sickle cell patients. They didn't know I had sickle cell. Yeah. And I did a collaborative project with him when I did research at in Nigeria at the Sickle Cell Center in Lagos, Nigeria.
Oh, really?
Co-author on the paper. It was just really amazing. It opened up doors that I didn't even know were there. So that was one of the most amazing transitions of my life.
Like, one of the things you're not saying that I just want to check out with you is that being a teenager, even when you're an outgoing person, can be sometimes very lonely. And then on top of it, having sickle cell can also be lonely making. Was that an issue? And if it was, how did you find people to, you know, community? Or are you describing that with this?
My sister has sickle cell. She's a year older than me. And we were just built-in best friends / frenemies, depending on the day.
Yes. You know,
depending on who stole whose clothes that day. So it was already a built-in support system. And then on top of that, I had a cousin who had sickle cell disease, and he was a year and a half older than me. So we were all in the age group. So I never really sought out community because I already had it built in with my family. Also, actually, I remember I never told people I had sickle cell. I was very private that time. I thought it was being private, but I realized I was just being protective. I didn't want people to think I was weak. Like I mentioned, I was athletic and I was a tomboy. I actually played basketball from my high school. And I just did not want to be seen as weak. I was a neurotic straight A student, you know, the type of person I would never want to hang out with now. You know, just very like, oh my God, I got an 89, not a 90. And what am I going to do? Like, you know, so in that respect, high school, I just kind of put my head down, didn't really tell people unless I had to. And that was usually, I told my teachers if I missed school. But actually, that attitude really hurt me my first year of college at university, because I don't want to tell anybody anything. It's my life. I don't want to be weak. So it was my first semester, I really struggled. I really suffered because when I went through a sickle cell crisis, like I said, I didn't go and tell my professors right away. So I have a major paper due, and now I'm saying I don't feel good. So that was really difficult to navigate. After that, all blew in my face. And then friends also, like, okay, I haven't seen you for 3 days. Where have you been? Oh, I haven't been feeling well. Okay, hope you get over your cold. And then it happened again, and then again. And then it would just sound suspicious. So I had to really learn. I had to get over myself, say, and just really communicate to my roommate who I lived with in the dorm that, okay, I have sickle cell, this is what it is, I get pain crises, and it was very, very difficult for me to do. It sounds so simple, but because of I was private, it was difficult for me to do and to open up that way. Mm-hmm. But I had to do that in order to build a community, a home away from home, because I didn't have my like, who was going to bring me my homework at the hospital if they didn't know why or share. Mm-hmm. Once I did that, I saw the benefits of it, that I would be able to get notes and get help. I didn't have to do it all by myself. I didn't have to. So actually, if you talk about loneliness, I didn't really feel that in my early teenage years. It was more my university years, because I really went into myself. I didn't have family around. I didn't have that social, the support network I had normally. My sister was in university in Boston living her life, but she was still close enough to home where if she needed to come home for a few days, she could do that, or my parents could visit her at the hospital if she did end up in the hospital. Whereas I was in the hospital by myself, no one visited me because I didn't tell anybody. And it was very lonely, you can say. But after I slowly started to open up to friends, I was able to build a community around me. And people were surprisingly, like, you know, they received it well. They were kind. They were ready to help. And that shocked me. But also helped me realize that it's not, you can build the support that you have. It's not just family that's there for you. Other people can be there for you too. That was a huge realization.
So one more question, and then I know you have to go. Last time you and I spoke, you were talking about wanting to do some advocacy work. So it seems like, you know, you've had, you know, we've only just talked about like a sliver of the experience you've had over the years. Tell me a little bit about what you're thinking about in terms of doing advocacy work.
When I think about advocacy with sickle cell or chronic pain, chronic illness in general, I see that there is a demographic that's not being, that's not represented much. It's the young, particularly Black immigrant experience. It's the mom experience. It's the experience of somebody who's ambitious and wants a lot in life. And I want to create content that I wish I had. Like, okay, you're in pain, you're in a new city, how to convince this doctor in this ER that you're not pain-seeking. And I wish I had that kind of tips, like dress properly, how to speak. Yes, you need to drop your credentials, because people say they're not racist, but yet the data shows this implicit bias really affects your treatment. And I've seen the difference in how people treat me when they think I'm a Black single mom on welfare versus when they find out I'm college educated, my husband is a professional, I'm a stay-at-home mom. And, you know, it's disgusting. But in a time when I really needed relief and support and just to get healthy, and when I was actually a few times really afraid that I might die, like, this is what needed to happen. And so I found, you know, tips, certain things, like make your husband go with you to your pregnancy appointments, because it makes a difference when doctors see you're supported versus when they think you're not supported. When they see my husband visiting in the hospital, when they see my mom calling and asking questions, you know, or my friend who is a medical doctor, you know, really involved in my care, it changes the way they treat you, because they know they cannot get away with BS. And it's really sad. It's really unfortunate. But I really just want to be a resource for people that I wish I had. What to do? Your first, you're going to university. Great. How to write to your professors and tell them you have sickle cell. Visit the disability office. Get that official letter so that if you are in the hospital during finals week, it doesn't affect your whole GPA. How to cope with sickness when you have toddlers. Activities you can do that are not so burdensome on you physically. And so these are so it's from the patient point of view. I want to help people who are patients, who are sickle cell patients, how to navigate the healthcare system. Just little tips and tricks. Of course, I don't know everything. I'm also learning myself. And also how to manage with life. You want to live. I want more than just to survive and get over my pain today. I want to thrive. I want to have a good life. I want to have experiences and live. And then also, I want to humanize sickle cell patients to nurses, to doctors, who see us as a monolith, who I've heard them accuse me of drug seeking when they thought I was not listening, the way they speak to us. And I want, and I think half the problem is that we as sickle cell patients don't put ourselves out there. We don't tell our story. A lot of people, especially white people, Americans are very open with disease and they talk very openly about it. And I feel as a result, the society knows about cancer. They know about the different fibromyalgia and all these other sicknesses, and it humanizes it and makes it, it just humanizes it, and people have more compassion for those diseases and understand it. So if we don't tell our story, somebody else is going to control our narrative, which is what I don't want, which is what's happening right now. So that's all I want. I just want to create awareness about what sickle cell disease is, that people, that it's human beings who have it. People who are, have regular lives and struggles and hopes and dreams also have sickle cell disease and are just trying to live a happy life, a happy full life. That's all. And if a few research dollars goes towards sickle cell, that makes me even happier. So,
Fatima, lovely to talk to you as always. Thank you. I did talk with your mother and we discussed maybe when she gets back from her travels, maybe we could have a call with the three of us, sort of look at the how you viewed some key points along the road, you know, get that.
That would be interesting. To know what she says.
Yeah.
It's not something we talk about.
She was interested.
Thank you so much, Danny. Honestly, any kind of opportunity I get to talk about sickle cell, I thank you just for highlighting it, the disease, and letting people know it does exist. And I'm very, very thankful for you for that. And please let me know any other opportunities you have where I can moan and groan about it. Please let me know about that. Thank you
so
much.
Well, you're actually not that much of a moaner and groaner.
Oh, so. Okay. Good to know. Good to know.
Yeah. All right.
Thanks, take
my best to Aziz.
Thank you. My best to Ann.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
I learned something new about Fatima. I learned that she was pre-med in college and shadowed her physician and worked in a lab. I already knew that she had a wicked sense of humor and pulls every lesson she can out of her experiences. I just love and admire her energy. I'm delighted to have a front row seat in her ongoing journey. Follow my blog, podcasts, and resources through my website. See you around the block.